I would like to invite Dr. Tamsi Owen from Evelina London Children's Hospital to present radiotaxia and misophonia in TS patients. Allora, la dottoressa Owen, che lavora all'Evelina London Children's Hospital, si occupa di bambini con sindrome di Tourette e ci parlerà in particolare di due aspetti estremamente importanti, che sono uno, gli attacchi di rabbia, che sono spesso anche aspetti, diciamo così, poco presi in considerazione ma importanti nella quotidianità, e la misofonia.
Mi dispiace, non parlo italiano, but we have the translated slides here, so hopefully that will help. So my name is Tamsin Owen, I'm a clinical psychologist and I work in a TICS and neurodevelopmental movement service at the Evelina Children's Hospital in London. And I'm here today to talk to you about a phenomenon called misophonia and also that's its relationship to rage attacks in children with Tourette syndrome. So I'm going to talk a bit about what misophonia is generally and what some of the proposed underlying mechanisms are before moving on to think about how misophonia presents in children with Tourette syndrome. And I'd like to talk in a bit more detail about a case series of children we looked at jointly with our colleagues in the clinic, Professor Cardona's clinic here in Rome. I'd like to start by thinking about our relationship to sound in general. And I think it's useful to think of it as part of a spectrum. So if you think about it, many of us have an uncomfortable or unpleasant reaction to certain sounds. So for example, a common one would be somebody scraping their nails down a chalkboard, or feeling annoyed at somebody chewing loudly or snoring. So it's quite common for people to have an uncomfortable reaction to sound. But at the more extreme end of the spectrum, that discomfort turns to extreme anger or rage. And that's where the term misophonia comes in. So misophonia literally means hatred of sound. And people usually have an aversion to oral sounds, for example, chewing, nasal sounds like breathing or snoring, or just sounds in the environment, for example, someone typing on a keyboard or the noise of an ambulance siren. And people who have misophonia have a very extreme emotional response to these particular sounds, ranging from disgust to quite severe anger episodes and anxiety in some people. People develop an obsession with the sound, and unsurprisingly, because it creates such an extreme emotional reaction, they can become very avoidant of it to prevent that feeling. And interestingly, the hatred of the sound is often very person-specific or situation-specific. So in misophonia, it's very commonly reported that people will only have a hatred of that sound in relation to a parent or a sibling. So for example, somebody might hate the sound of their mother chewing and eating, but they don't feel that same annoyance if it was a friend or a stranger. So there's a psychological behavioural component to it as well. The misophonia isn't a psychiatric classified disorder, and some people have argued that it perhaps should be. So Schroeder and his colleagues proposed this particular diagnostic criteria for misophonia, and I've mentioned most of it, but just to add, the individual would have to recognize that their emotional response is out of proportion to the situation. So there's a level of insight there, and knowing that it's not a kind of usual response. Also, the anger that the person feels would have to cause significant distress. And lastly, it wouldn't be accounted for by any other disorder such as OCD or PTSD, because there is some overlap in the conditions. So for example, somebody might develop a fear of a sound because it's related to a trauma they've experienced. And in that case, it's more related to PTSD than misophonia. Now, we don't know much about why people might experience misophonia, but there are a couple of theories. So firstly, Dozier proposed that it's a conditioned response. So somebody would hear a sound, experience an unpleasant physiological stress response, including tightening of muscles. That would be experienced as unpleasant. And then that feeling would generate a strong emotion, which would get reinforced every time the person heard that sound. And this makes sense. Studies have shown that in people with misophonia, the reaction gets worse over time. So the idea that it's a conditioned response makes sense, but it probably doesn't tell the whole story. Why do some people have misophonia and others don't? So it's interesting to think about the neurology involved. And Kumar and colleagues discovered that a particular region of the brain had particular abnormalities in individuals with misophonia. So the particular region is called the anterior insular cortex, and this is a very core hub in the salience network, and it's very important for the interpretation of body signals and also processing of emotions. So there are atypical activation within this area, and also atypical functional connectivity between this region and regions that are responsible for emotional processing. So the idea is that these difficulties within these pathways would affect the perception of your internal body states, the perception of sounds, and also physiological arousal. So there's definitely a neurology involved here that probably make people vulnerable to experiencing misophonia. So let's think about misophonia in individuals with Tourette's syndrome. It's actually a very underreported phenomenon in this particular group. There's just one adult case study and a case series of 12 children that I mentioned earlier. So while it's very underreported, is actually something that we see fairly regularly in our clinic. And you could propose that individuals with Tourette's syndrome may be more vulnerable to experiencing misophonia because there are a lot of shared challenges and difficulties that they face. So for example, as we've already heard, we know that children with Tourette's syndrome are much more likely to have sensory sensitivities. And so already there's this heightened perception of sound, which could feed into misophonia. Also, as with misophonia, individuals with Tourette's syndrome have got very similar range of comorbidities. So as in misophonia, there's a much higher rate of OCD, ADHD, and rage, again, as we've already heard. And it's particularly interesting to think about the relationship between misophonia, Tourette syndrome, and rage. We know that there's an increased vulnerability to experience rage attacks in individuals with Tourette syndrome. So in children, there's a 35% prevalence of sudden explosive outbursts, and in adults, there's an 8% chance, or an 8% prevalence. And the clinical features of rage attacks really parallel those of misophonia, in that the response is entirely out of proportion with the situation. And again, there's a much higher rate of comorbidity. So in children who have rage attacks and Tourette syndrome, there's again an extra vulnerability to experiencing comorbidities such as OCD and ADHD, as with misophonia. And that's thought to be related to the challenges with impulse control and also the compulsive tendencies that they might experience. One particularly interesting study found that children with Tourette's syndrome have difficulty disengaging their attention from anger evoking stimuli, so it's very hard for them to take their focus away from the thing that made them angry. And this attentional processing bias could be very important in understanding why children with Tourette's may be more likely to have misophonia, again, because they might not be able to take their attention away from the sound that's making them feel uncomfortable. So given that there might be a greater risk, if you like, of children with Tourette syndrome experiencing misophonia, it's interesting to think about what the neurology is in both conditions. And as I mentioned earlier, the anterior insular cortex has been found to be more heavily involved in individuals with misophonia. And similarly, the insular cortex has also been found to be involved in individuals with Tourette syndrome. So there's been found to be atypical maturation of this area and also increased connectivity between the insular cortex and regions that supplement motor activity. So if you like, there's a shared neurology between Tourette syndrome and misophonia, which makes the rationale compelling that people with Tourette syndrome might be increasingly vulnerable for misophonia. So moving on to think more specifically about misophonia in tics, our clinic in London collaborated with Professor Cardona's clinic here in Rome and produced a description of 12 cases of children with misophonia and Tourette syndrome. So in terms of the demographics, there were 9 males and 3 females. Very interestingly, nearly all of these children had comorbidities. So 8 had either obsessive compulsive disorder or obsessive compulsive behaviours, and 3 had ADHD. And we know that comorbidities are high in individuals with Tourette syndrome, but this was pretty high, suggesting that if there are comorbidities, there's increased risk of misophonia. And the mean onset for misophonia was 10 years, so slightly later than the average onset for tics. The main cause of the misophonia symptoms were either specific words. So for example, one particular boy found the words blood pressure provoked an angry response. And the remaining ones were physiological sounds such as chewing, breathing, and there were also some environmental sounds. There was a very strong family specificity, so it was mainly parents or siblings that were the cause of the misophonic response. And the behavioural responses were varied, but mainly expected. So over half of the children experienced angry episodes in response to the stimuli. Interestingly, there was an increase in tics in response to the sound. Excuse me, although not surprising, because as we know, stress can increase tics, and therefore if they're stressed by a sound, you'd imagine that tics would increase. What was particularly interesting though was that the tics came before the angry response. So the children would hear the sound, they'd experience the premonitory urge, and then they would tic, and that was then followed by the anger. So it felt as if the tic and the premonitory urge had become a conditioned response to the sound, but they were all quite closely enmeshed, the tics and the angry outburst. So you can imagine that misophonia in children with Tourette syndrome might be experienced as even more distressing, because not only is it provoking an angry outburst, it's also increasing tics in a lot of children. Interestingly, some of the children felt an urge to repeat the sound that made them feel angry. So that demonstrates the kind of compulsive nature within this particular group. And in 2 of the children, the sound led to self-injurious behaviour. I wanted to talk a little bit about treatment. Now, within this particular group, the children were coming to tics clinics, and so the focus was primarily for treatment of tics, But we did look at the impact on misophonia, and in some cases misophonia was directly included as part of the treatment. So overall the picture was quite mixed. Pharmacological treatment was offered in half of the cases, leading to improvements in five of the children, and that was mainly with aripiprazole and sertraline. But what we saw was mainly an improvement in the tics, with less of an impact on the misophonia. A variety of psychological interventions were tried, so cognitive behaviour therapy, exposure response prevention, and parenting interventions. And just to say a little bit more about some of those, with the cognitive behaviour therapy, when applied directly to misophonia, you'd be looking at changing the thoughts associated with the sound. So working on thoughts such as, I can't tolerate this sound, or I can't cope with this sound, and trying to come up with a more positive coping thought. And you'd also look to try and manage some of the maladaptive coping strategies in response to the sound. With the exposure response prevention work, you would be exposing the child to the sound, which feels quite cruel, but the idea would be that you try and get them to hold in their tics or hold in their angry sound and their angry response for as long as they could, with the hope that they would begin to learn to tolerate it better. And lastly, the parenting work, because there's a very clear kind of behavioural psychological component to this, because usually it's a parent or a sibling who's provoking the angry response, it's felt quite important to include parents in the work itself. So we got parents involved in positively reinforcing the child when they didn't have an angry response to the sound, with either rewards or praise, for example. So as I said, the results were mixed. There was a positive impact of these treatments on tics, and some positive impact on misophonia. But it's very early days. This is a small sample of children, and we can't make any firm conclusions about what particular treatment might be helpful for misophonia. It was interesting because in one of the cases, the misophonia completely stopped when the child reached adulthood. And that's interesting because usually misophonia tends to get worse with age. So it begs the question, was this just particular to one child? Or is misophonia in children with tics similar to the tic presentation, in that tics kind of often die out as the child gets older? If a child with tics has misophonia, does it follow a similar sort of pattern? But we need more research to find out. So just to conclude, we felt, I suppose, between both our clinics that perhaps psychiatric classification of misophonia was perhaps, would over-pathologise the condition. It's clearly something that exists across the population, and yet it might be more prevalent in individuals with tic syndrome, Tourette syndrome, sorry. But there are a lot of labels that people with Tourette syndrome have to endure, and maybe this would just be another one and perhaps not that helpful. However, we did think that it's very important when assessing a child for tics just to be aware of misophonia, particularly if rage is present or other comorbidities like OCD and ADHD particularly are present, because it could really be a key feature for them in terms of what makes their tics worse or what makes their sort of emotional life worse. So to look out for it in assessment, and obviously to consider the level of distress and impairment that it might produce in individuals when considering whether or not to treat it. And lastly, just to say that we clearly need some further research in this area to understand what the prevalence is in children with tic disorder, what the prognosis might be, and how we might go about treating children with tics. The treatments in the general misophonia population is very mixed as well. We need perhaps more firm evidence within the broader misophonic population too, to help us kind of guide interventions in tics and Tourette. So thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Darcy, for your very interesting presentation. Thank you.
Bene, se ci sono domande, abbiamo il tempo per due, massimo tre domande a tutti i relatori che hanno parlato questa mattina e poi avremo il break subito fuori dalla sala a destra, anzi a sinistra mi dicono, scusatemi. C'è qualche domanda? Troppa informazione o troppa stanchezza? Ecco, il professore Zappella, grazie.
Well, I would like to thank Dr. Owen for his very brilliant presentation. And I wanted to ask you something which concerns the diagnosis in UK compared to Italy. In our country, well, there is presently a sort of epidemic in over-diagnosis of autistic disorders. And as far as I know in my experience, a number of children with Rett syndrome are misdiagnosed as autistic. Does it happen in your country as well or not?
That's really interesting because it's something we do see a lot in our clinics. We see a lot of children who have symptoms of ASD and we refer a lot of children for ASD assessments. We don't do the assessments in our clinic. It's very difficult because I think we try and think with families, is this if you were autistic, would this be a helpful label for you? And often, actually, it can help the child because it gives them more support at school, for example. Whether or not they're overdiagnosed, it's hard to say, because I think you're right that there's features of, but often they wouldn't meet full criteria for ASD. And I think we particularly see in girls that it's even more challenging because it presents more subtly. That might be just as impairing. I don't know if you have you heard of the social communication questionnaire? Yeah. It's a good point. Obviously, there's a big overlap with OCD and the repetitive behaviours there. So it's a good question. I think that because we don't see the follow through on diagnosis afterwards, because we don't assess for it in our service, it's hard to say. But I do know we see a lot of children who nearly meet criteria, but perhaps wouldn't and are at risk of being diagnosed.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.